passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Ride with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello everybody, welcome to Rewind to Raw. I'm John Pollock, along with Wei Ting and his hat. Hello, Wei.
Yeah, my hat is here, yeah. You know, I didn't get a chance to do my hair today, so the hat's back.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. How are you doing? How are you energy-wise?
Pretty good. Yeah, I'm doing all right, man. I booked my second vaccine shot, so I'm getting that on Wednesday.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah. Very exciting. Yeah. How was your weekend?
My weekend was great. I had a really great time over the weekend.
Sounds like that's most people in the city, because this is the first week that we've reopened patios and
yes.
Last call. So it seems like, and the sun's out, so it feels like everybody's in a good mood.
I feel very optimistic. It feels like life is slowly coming back, and I think we're going to be that much further ahead in a month from now. So we're mm-hmm. approaching, like we're into phase one. Phase two is like in the not too distant future. So fuck it. I'm going to be optimistic.
Oh yeah, why not? Full permission to. Yeah, so it feels like it's just a good vibe in the city right now. So we'll enjoy it until we find something else to complain about.
I'm all wired way right before I started Raw, tried something new tonight. I had a Josta.
Did you really? No, you didn't.
So but I'm that all you powered up.
You have been watching Loki.
Way, I did watch Loki, and this is going to be my test. I can't remember what night I watched it, but I sat down and I said, "All right, going to give this a shot." And I started it, and I'm not going to lie. When I saw 51 minutes, like Christ, so that's like
is that
yes
a
that is that is a part of it for me. Like I'm not the person that is. Oh my God, 3 days till Loki drops. I can't wait. Like it's going to be very much a.
Are you like that with anything?
There's some things I look forward to, absolutely. But, I mean, Loki was not one of them. It's like, I did not finish...
What is the thing where you're like, 51 minutes? So I can't wait.
This show, every Monday night, Way. I look at 10:09 p.m. Like, yes, this show will be over in 51 minutes. I can't wait. I can't wait for 51 more minutes till Raw is done. I can't wait. Is that dude hypnotized? Reginald is how I feel every third hour of Raw. Mm. I'm trying to... okay. When The Last Dance came out last year, I was pretty pumped for that.
Oh, yes.
I was pretty excited for that.
Felt like forever ago.
Yeah. When friends of the show hit me up in the DMs and had some review copies, I was a very happy individual.
Mm-hmm. As was I.
So anyway.
But yeah, you're enjoying Loki so far?
I liked it. I got through the first episode. Thing is, like with these Marvel shows, like you look at that runtime and it's like half an hour is the credits at the end. So, I mean, it's really just a It's a deceiving number. But no, I like the beginning. Like, I got into it. I'm the person that's coming into it, like, with very... I would be the casual that you are basing average interest in. And, I mean, I like the low-key character. That's why I gave this a test. I really liked Owen Wilson. I thought he was mm-hmm. very good in the first episode. I really liked your analysis of them essentially taking all of the money spent on these last Marvel films built around these Infinity Stones, and they just gave a middle finger to these Infinity Stones. Like, ha, the paperweights, you fools that spent all your time and your money on these films. We're on to the next thing. Time travel, dude.
I mean, you know, it's out with the old and in with the new, man. You know, I'm glad you're watching it. So it sounds like I think you should be guesting on one of these MCU laters whenever you have the chance.
I can't make that verbal commitment yet. It will, we'll see. But I'm going to follow it. This one is what, 6 episodes? Is that
yes.
it?
Yes,
so it that's is. That's my type of commitment for a series.
Yeah.
6 episodes, I will give my time of 6 episodes. Like, could you imagine... I mean, there's still some series that are out there, but could you imagine you today following a show that's, say, 22 episodes?
No, it's a bit of a turnoff. Like, if I feel like I'm committing, you know, several months to it, it almost feels like I probably shouldn't just start. I also think, like, it's hard to have every episode feel like it's completely necessary when you extend something for that long. Here, it's like, you know, you miss 1 week, you miss a sixth of the entire thing. So it feels like everyone is that much more important. And you can probably have, like, you know, more significant cliffhangers at the end of every episode.
So one other thing I wanted to bring up, and it's been piquing my curiosity for like 3 or 4 weeks now, okay? Mm-hmm. I've been a bit stalkerish when it comes to you, okay?
Okay.
All right. And that is your follower count on Twitter that has slowly been ticking downward. And you are getting down to like very low single digits. And everybody that is not following, last week, I thought we had hit the lowest because Wei was down to 3 follows. Post-wrestling, of course. Then he was following this account of these cats that do stuff. And then there was a third follow, which was Brick Fanatics. Some Lego related account. Well, latest update post family, the cat account got the axe. He got rid of the cats. He is down to 2 followers, 2 people he is following, one of which is basically following himself. So it is down essentially to Brick Fanatics. I am not insulted in the least that I got unfollowed in this whole torpedo because I'm certainly not in small company. But what led to this purge, Wei, of unfollows? And please tell me how you got down. Please tell me about this cat account as well. I have so many questions.
I did not expect this to be brought up on this show. Well, I mean, I like many people, I think I've been assessing my relationship with social media over the past year. And I think I've largely deduced that it's like, it's largely, you know, not good for me. And rather than, I think, I don't know, follow maybe a select few people, I've just decided to unfollow pretty much everybody. And the thing is, like, what I hate about social media is that we somehow, like, treat these as, like, Rolodexes of our friends. And it's like, you know, if you don't follow me, then you're not my friend. I mean, that's fucking bullshit. Like, if I contact you outside of Twitter, then I am your friend. And vice versa. Just because you follow me on Twitter does not mean you are like, you know, you like me whatsoever. So I'm just like, I want to take a more kind of like, you know, utilitarian approach to social media. And that means following Post Wrestling because I tweet under Post Wrestling and I will also retweet appropriate things for work. But that also means creating lists. Anonymous lists where people like I could follow whoever I want and they don't necessarily know it, and I don't necessarily know if they're following me, and who cares. I do follow you, John, and I follow everybody in the Post Wrestling Network. It's just under a list and you wouldn't know.
Okay, you don't have to follow me, by the way. I know I've brought that up in the past, but I feel now
I want to.
I've got the ultimate commitment from Wei. He is contracted to me. So it's like, you don't have to follow me.
I follow you via life.
Exactly, Wei. You follow me in life. I mean, I had a bit of envy when I saw that number at 2, because as of today, I am following 3,821 more people than you.
It's also an experiment for me, like, just to see if I'd be able to keep up with professional wrestling through other avenues, other things, you know, like news sites, like Reddit is a great place to, like, catch headlines. And thus far, it's been perfectly fine. You can also follow by topic as well. Neil introduced that to me. So, like, if you just wanted to follow a lot, I just want to take, like, some of the personal stuff out of it, you know?
All right. Well, again, the cat account, like, just what was going through your mind when you hit unfollow on that? Like, that's something completely divorced from wrestling. That's just, that was a cold unfollow I observed from afar.
The cat thing, yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes these things just pop up and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'll follow it for a period, and when I lose interest, I'll unfollow it. So it's just that. It's like peeking into a room. When you're bored of the room, you leave.
Okay. It's probably a way more efficient Wei to use Twitter than just having this list. Like, I would love to sit down one day and just go through this list of 3,800 people and just boom, gone.
It gets so big that you don't even, like, if I wanted to specifically find my John Pollock tweets, I can't even find them anymore. Because they're so deep and buried, right? Because the things are so big. Anyway, this is all really relevant conversation that I'm glad you brought up, John, because this Thursday, for the return of the wellness policy, Jordan Goodman and I will be talking about this very topic. We're talking about the topic of social media in relation to a film that I think a lot of people may have seen on Netflix called The Social Dilemma. It's a very interesting documentary talking about maybe some of the pitfalls and some of the behind-the-scenes business, maybe relevance and business machinations behind social media that we might not be thinking about. But, you know, Jordan and I will be talking a bit more about maybe some of the positives of social media as well. So looking to have an interesting conversation. And this week we'll be starting at 1 p.m. Special start time because Jordan is off to Vegas to officiate his brother's wedding. So 1
what
p.m.
What a lame excuse. You should have held him to the regular start time.
Yeah. What's more important? This podcast or your brother's wedding, right?
Jesus, Jordan. Well, I look forward to that. That's, I would say in my life, there are two movies I have watched that just scared the hell out of me. And they weren't horror movies. It was when I was a teenager watching Requiem for a Dream. I decided right then and there, I will never deviate into hardcore drugs in my life. I will not even touch any type of drugs in my life. And guess what? I've been batting 1,000 on that. And then I saw The Social Dilemma, and that scared me maybe even more.
That's a tougher addiction to kick.
Yeah, probably so, yes.
Yeah.
So I look forward to your lengthy discussion on Thursday. The rest of the week here at Post Wrestling, listen, I'm just going to stay outright. It's not going to be a great week, okay? We're going to be talking about tonight's Raw, which will lead into Hell in a Cell on Sunday. But on Tuesday, it's Rewind Away. And we are going to be reviewing The Longest Yard. Not just The Longest Yard, the remake of The Longest Yard. Yes, someone sat down and said, you know, that classic starring Burt Reynolds from 1974? Let's do it again. Okay, Burt Reynolds. Who is 2005's version of Burt Reynolds? Adam Sandler. And that, everyone, is your setup for a movie that I am not dreading reviewing this. I'm actually looking forward to reviewing this because the watching is done. And now it is time to discuss one of the most bizarre movies with Wei Ting on Tuesday.
Is it that bizarre? Okay. I've never seen it. I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, I was like a bit of a pretty big Adam Sandler fan. I feel like I've seen most of the Adam Sandler movies, but not this one. And I would even say, like, this is probably the only time we'll ever review an Adam Sandler review on a wrestling movie on a wrestling podcast. But, I mean, there is, like, precedent for wrestling relations with, I guess, Captain Insano in The Waterboy. But nothing like The Longest Yard, because no, who is in this, John?
Oh, this has the lineup of all lineups of supporting cast members, from Steve Austin as a racist prison guard Kevin Nash, Bob Sapp, gets better, Bill Goldberg, who is also bringing along his co-star, his jackhammer, and the great Khali.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm imagining best supporting actor nominee, Great Khali, for this.
Many options, yes. Chris Rock, prominent role in this. Somehow Courtney Cox found her way into this film. It's a movie, and we're going to be reviewing it on Tuesday. I promise you will be an entertaining review. Have you watched this?
Not yet, no.
Oh, of course. All right, well, Wei will get back to us on Tuesday. Also, I want to mention Andrew Thompson is going to have an interview with Famous B up on the site, chatting about his time in Lucha Underground, and probably a lot, as Andrew Thompson will dive in deep with Famous B. And then Tuesday night, up next, the lads, Braden Harrington and Davey Portman, live at 10:15 Eastern, twitch.tv/upnextpodcast. They will be live with the, non-hangover edition, I will say, of NXT, as they will follow up on Sunday night's show. And what is next? Because it's time for a change.
Yeah, what is next for William Regal? That's the big question on everybody's mind. Do check out their review of NXT TakeOver In Your House, of course. That's on their feed right now. Please continue, John, with the rest of the schedule.
Well, I just want to make mention, Thursday, it's your double shot of Wei Ting, because you get the wellness policy and MCU later with Wei Ting and WH Park, a very generous W.H. Park, who, I'm going to spoil this for those that don't listen, at the end of last week's podcast, he invited any post-wrestling listeners to come visit him at the BMV, and he will take a picture with you if you come up and say the magic word of fuck this guy.
Wow. Yeah, you're right.
Really cool of him. He gave out the address, said, come, I want to meet all the post listeners. It would be my pleasure.
I did not expect that, but, you know, he's in a great mood. You know, it's like we're opening up. I think, you know, a people lover like WH, of course, you know. So thank you. By the way, that first episode is up there for free for everybody on this feed right now. I also wanted to give a special shout out to the Nubian Wrestling Advocates and their debut that just occurred this past Sunday. Fantastic debut episode from Chris, from Nate Milton, of course, and their guests, Sister Maria and Rich Fan, as well as the Nubian News from Andrew Thompson. A lot of great ideas are put into the show, and I can't wait to see how it evolves.
Yes, you can check them out. A lot of feedback to that show. Chris, now all over the forums. The man will get back to you in the YouTube comments. They are very hands-on with this show, so I'm happy to have them part of the Post family. And then Friday night, we're live at midnight following SmackDown and Dynamite. I'm ready to wrap up these Friday night doubleheaders, and this is the last one for the foreseeable future. And then Sunday night, we're live for our double-double Ice Cap and Espresso members with our Hell in a Cell post-show. We will make sense of all that goes down at Hell in a Cell, which... make sure you note the special start time, the new start time for these pay-per-views, 8 Eastern, which that alone, I will forever be thankful to WWE for moving these pay-per-views to 8 p.m. Because if you wanted to see me battling a tornado, a literal tornado, pretty much, it was me trying to get ready for those shows that would start at 6:30 for the kickoff show. I am so happy that these are starting at 8 o'clock. I am not going to give a WWE show a thumbs down for at least 3 months just because of the start time.
I think that's a Patreon stream that we should be advertising, you know, the hour before the pay-per-view starts with John Pollock.
If you saw a reality show of me on these Sunday pay-per-views, you would just be like, how is he doing this? It's crazy. But I am pretty great, so I made it happen.
Now, it does also mean we're likely to start a little bit later. Are you'd
that's
rather
fine.
That?
That's fine. That's fine.
Cool.
We can talk till 4 a.m. if you want. I will do it. But that is Sunday. That is the week here at postwrestling.com. If you are so inclined, go join the Post Wrestling Cafe. $6 gets you in all the bonus content, all of our archives. We are live after Raw, live after Dynamite, no matter what night of the week it's on, and live after SmackDown.
Yes, we are. We'll always be here.
Let's go into some news, Way. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Up first, NXT TakeOver in your house. Was this on in your house on Sunday night? And if so, did you have any strong thoughts 24 hours later?
It was on, not on Sunday night, but Monday morning, late Sunday night. And I thought it was an enjoyable show, but, you know, I wouldn't say one that felt of the very high standard of maybe some of the more memorable NXT in your houses. Or sorry, NXT TakeOvers, I mean. Great main event. Fantastic main event. I really like the opening six-man tag as well. Everything else in the middle was just kind of like, it wasn't, nothing was bad. But I wouldn't say there was anything. It felt slightly beneath TakeOver level. But again, you know, that you're talking about a very high bar.
It's a very high bar. I would say if you're assessing the entire show, to me it was well below like the, I would say the upper echelon of TakeOvers and probably even the median. That's not necessarily a slight. Like this in a vacuum was a very good show. I echo what you say about the main event was terrific. I loved the main event. And I also, my one concern going into that match was with, you know, that was the big match on this show. You've got five of your big faces of the brand. And I'm thinking, God, are we going to get 45 minutes here with these six? 26 minutes was a perfect length for this match. I thought they utilized Karrion Kross the way you would want to use him in that type of a match. I thought the Cole and Gargano, some of the double team spots that they did, I would love to see a tag run out of those two at some point. And I think as much as people are talking about that, you know, when people get moved up to the main roster and Paul Levesque's talking about, well, it doesn't always mean someone's leaving just because they lose a big match. I think one of the things that we kind of took for granted with NXT is that there was always that constant cycle that no one got complacent, even like high level guys. It was always a refresh of those main event roles because as soon as someone was big, the window was 2 years max and you're moving on. And then it creates that need to make new stars and it's constantly evolving. It's exciting to see new names in those places. That's the story of the main roster for this whole generation is that you make it to a spot, you're there for life. It's like a Supreme Court judge being appointed. The Miz is going to be in the Miz's spot until the day he decides not to. Dolph Ziggler. Tonight on Raw, they're talking about this is Jeff Hardy and John Morrison's first singles match on Raw since 2007. It's like, what are we talking about here? 14 years ago, they had a singles match on Raw. And with NXT, you now have, there's a lot less of those talents that are moving on. And you look at someone like Adam Cole, who's terrific, but it's also to the viewer, I think you look at him that he's done everything at this brand. And what more is there to do? I watched this match and I at least saw an alternative that at least you could segue him off to a bit of a tag run and it can really revitalize you, even though, you know, terrific performer, but story-wise, it just feels like he's run the gamut of winning the title so many times. And I just think that that's something that NXT, it was actually an advantage that talent would move on and you're constantly going through that evolutionary process.
Yeah, there's certainly pros and cons to being able to retain the stars that you've developed up until this point. But, you know, one of the hallmarks of NXT, I mean, it's in the name. You know, it's always fresh. You're always looking for something new. You know, we can't really discount the idea that they can change characters. I think that's almost like more important, you know, and maybe the sign of like a promotion being a real promotion rather than just, you know, having this sort of, whether you do call it a benefit or a disadvantage of constantly having to cycle through your talent. I want to see an Adam Cole evolve, you know, the way we're seeing, I think they're attempting, you know, with a Kyle O'Reilly, for instance, you know, trying to evolve his character a little bit. But, you know, Tommaso Ciampa seems to be taking that role right now. I mean, to an extent, Johnny Gargano as well, pairing him like, you know, with tag team partners. But, you know, it means like there's going to be, I guess, that one last spot, you know, for people up and coming from the performance center. But nonetheless, I do feel like we are sort of in a bit of a lull right now with NXT. At least that's the sense I get from a general interest. And I feel like the show overall kind of reflected that.
Yeah, I thought Cameron Grimes was outstanding in the ladder match. I think like hearing that was the one match where I thought like the crowd did have an impression on me was you could see that Cameron Grimes has really gotten over to this audience. For the rest of the show, like, they were touting the fact that this is the most people we've ever had at the Capitol Wrestling Center. And granted, this was not Daly's place. You didn't have 5,000 people. But that said, like, the crowd made, it didn't sound any different at all with more voices there or more people there. It sounded like the same kind of low energy performance center.
See, it sounded a ton that they were piping in noise, but there were also periods where they sounded quieter than, you know, a full on piped in NXT or at least like, you know, performance center or CWC type of crowd. So maybe it was like a combination of both and they're kind of testing it.
They also seemed to all be masked. Like when you saw the crowd shots, it seemed like everyone was masked. And I'm sure that's if they're telling people to be masked, you know, that might impact people's desire to be chanting and being vocal.
Yeah, I'm sure that would probably be part of it as well. You know, these crowds really do make a huge difference to the quality of some of these shows, you know, especially when you're talking about NXT, and I think Full Sail being such a big part of that identity. But yeah, the big talk coming out of it, of course, is the Will and Regal thing. And yeah, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, Mackenzie Mitchell caught up with William Regal at the end of the night. What did you think of the show? Regal said, good show. And then lamented that there is more bedlam than I have ever seen here in my 7 years. And it's time for a change. Enough is enough. And it's time for a change. And that followed.
Wait, was this bedlam that bad? I mean, this man's been through like, you know.
The man went through a whole summer of the random attacks that led to Aleister Black running wild. I mean, he's seen a lot in this NXT era.
Got it. Okay. He's not a young man anymore. Yeah.
But maybe he's tired of this stuff. It's just the same stuff every single week. We got to move on. So. Yeah. That goes into our next story, and that was Fightful was the first one that reported that Samoa Joe had been at the WWE Performance Center recently, and then Dave Meltzer noted on his radio show Sunday night that Joe is coming back, and he is coming back to NXT, and Dave had said that it was told to him it would be a Regal-like role, and I guess that coupled with the angle is leading to everyone believing that Joe will, whether he's coming in to replace Regal, to back up Regal, it seems like he will be in a role, well, obviously in NXT and probably tied to that story. The other question, I mean, there's a lot that comes with that of Samoa Joe coming back into the fold after he was released in April. And everyone's question is going to be, is this coming back strictly for an out of the ring position? Or is wrestling even an option for Samoa Joe? Because, of course, he did have those two concussions that in early 2020 that he has not wrestled a match since February. And that was one of the big questions when he was released. What is his status? Because he was only being used in non-wrestling capacities during that last year with WWE.
You know, from a fan standpoint, I think that seems to be at the top of people's minds is, you know, will we see Samoa Joe get to wrestle again? And a move like this seems to suggest, you know, if it's true that he will be in a Regal-like role, I think it would seem to suggest that the answer might not be no, at least not for now, which I think is, you know, was met with a bit of disappointment from audiences that were hoping that we'd see some dream matchups involving him and people in AEW or New Japan or wherever else. But not knowing really the extent of the man's medical, you know, background, I mean, this could very well be the best move for him financially in terms of, you know, maybe future, like his ability to be a coach perhaps at the performance center. So, you know, creatively, I think we could at least bet on NXT treating him better than what he had in WWE main roster.
Yeah, and I mean, as we talked about over and over when the release happened, there's so many different roles he can fill beyond just wrestling. I mean, you have someone that I thought took the commentary pretty well. And it was funny because right before those releases, the very week, he did those great sit-down interviews over the TakeOver specials. And I thought was a great fit for that kind of a role. So, you know, I can see Joe, there's many, many options of how you can utilize him. And if there's anything that's been proven over the past 3 years, it's that someone not being cleared today does not mean someone will not be cleared tomorrow. So I don't think you can ever completely discount the future based on present status. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions with the Samoa Joe story, but, you know, an interesting development to see him. And, you know, further to that is when you look at all the available names out there, like does NXT become a option if they see somebody that, you know, wasn't utilized well on the main roster, that there's an entryway into the side door through NXT where maybe they have a better idea of how to utilize someone.
Yeah. I mean, again, I just feel like so much of these types of moves really kind of make it feel like there's a bit of a disconnect in terms of communication between the NXT roster, you know, higher ups and the main roster. You'd figure something like this wouldn't necessarily occur if there was a bit more communication. But of course, there's also maybe the element of what level of contract might be renegotiated with the move like this as well.
A few ratings notes. Brandon Thurston put out the numbers from Friday night. SmackDown did 1,944,000 viewers, 0.48 in the demo. So they were up 3% in viewers, down 4% in the demo. Dynamite did 487,000 viewers on TNT, a 0.19. This was almost identical to what they did the prior week. So it's pretty much been, you know, they have averaged just over 500,000 viewers in those three episodes. We'll get Fridays, and then the following week, they'll be on Saturday night. I got several interesting notes for the Canadian numbers, both for Friday and for Sunday. So, Wei, we had a case of the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good was SmackDown on Friday. There was no NHL playoffs, so that benefited SmackDown greatly. They ended up doing 228,500 viewers, way up from what they did the previous week. 110,000 in the 25 to 54 demo. So that was a very good number for SmackDown. They went against the Jays and Red Sox. That was the number one sports program for the night. Now, Dynamite, which followed it on TSN2, only did 67,000 viewers. So it was down from the prior week. One of the big problems, though, is that if you were noticing on the guide, they did not list Dynamite. In its slot, it just had it listed WNBA basketball. So I noticed two things. Number one was that. And then Saturday night, I'm watching the UFC prelims, and they've got the crawl up there, and a Dynamite banner is circulating for the whole 2 hours of the prelims, but they're plugging Dynamite Wednesday, 8 p.m.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's probably the static banner that they always use to promote Dynamite. But I mean, that's, you know, the fact it's not listed in the guide, I'm sure that had an impact on the number. Not to say they would have done, you know, 67,000 viewers that they would have blown the roof off with the proper listing, but that's not going to help. So that was not good. Sunday night, though. So did you have any idea that Sportsnet 360 was going to be carrying TakeOver?
I saw somebody maybe like mentioned something about it appearing on a guide somewhere, but that beyond that, I would have had no idea. And I watched SmackDown.
Yeah. Friday. So apparently they did run an ad for it during SmackDown that it would air on Sportsnet 360. I watched SmackDown. I had no idea. So I'm not saying no one was aware, some were, but they only did 24,000 viewers for this takeover, commercial free on Sportsnet 360. And I just think that you would ask most hardcore fans, and I don't think they would have known TakeOver. You didn't need the WWE Network in Canada to watch it on Sunday night. So that was, I just look at that number as indicative of no one being aware, even though NXT, it is not doing well on Tuesday nights in Canada. I mean, they've, I think it's certainly hurt the NXT audience up here in Canada with the move to USA and kind of how NXT was handled for a year and a half before Sportsnet 360 started airing it live. But anyway, those were some interesting Canadian numbers. Last thing, I wrote about this today in my update. Have you had a chance to see the Hitomi Hayashishita Shuri match yet from Stardom?
I have, yeah. It's really rare, I would say, that, you know, something that's maybe non-New Japan or non-AEW or, I guess, you know, non-NXT or WWE, I think gets the amount of buzz, like a match like this. So I definitely had to check it out.
Yeah, this, if you have not seen it, it's Utami defending the World of Stardom Championship against Shuri Kondo, who was a former fighter in UFC. And they, and I mean, this was just such a, I just thought like the pacing of this match, the work on the arm from Shuri, it just escalated so much, focusing on the arm and the time limit that they had in place. It just added so much drama in those closing minutes as they... Yeah.
Spoiler alert, obviously, everybody. Okay. So just skip ahead if you intend on watching it. But if you don't care, please go ahead, John.
Well, I will just say that, I mean, the time limit to me, it was such a great tool. And when it's utilized, I think more often than not, it works. And in this case, I thought it was just fantastic. I mean, this was largely just, it was a war of attrition between these two.
I laugh because we saw draws tonight as well, or at least we saw non-finishes tonight as well. And yeah, I imagine you'll have a very different reaction to some of the non-finishes.
Yes, somehow it's very different when you're doing a 30-minute time limit versus a 2-minute beat-the-clock challenge, and somehow you just weren't paying attention and then forgot what the rules of the match were. Bit of a difference here. But, you know, this is I've talked to people who it's their match of the year.
WH included.
Yeah. So
that tells you something. You know, I think it says something, the fact that you can have two people wrestle for 30 minutes and then another 15 on top of that and have no result and leave everybody completely, completely satisfied and touting it as the match of the year. It speaks to the quality of the work. And, you know, I'm not a Stardom viewer, but like Shuri was definitely somebody that caught my eye watching the Hanakamura show. And to see her in this match at her full ability for 45 minutes, she was absolutely magnificent. So smooth, so intense, and the emotion on her face upon the finish was absolutely incredible. So highly recommended match for people to check out.
Yeah, for me, like watching Hayashishita, who like I've watched like a good amount of her entire career, which isn't saying a lot because it's not even been 3 years since she debuted. I mean, she's already been placed as like the focal point of Stardom with the championship. Now she has that rivalry that I think is going to elevate her that much more. I mean, this rematch, I think, will be such a big deal when they go to it. And yeah, to your point, by the end of those 43 minutes, I mean, this place was electric for it. And it was... I just thought the end sequence just with, it was just, they left everything there. It was such a dramatic match. And I thought it was just outstanding.
Wanted to also mention, of course, the English commentary that we got as part of the show too. Did you watch it with English commentary?
Yes, I watched the English commentary. It was Stuart Fulton, who's been doing, you know, with Tokyo Joshi Pro and Noah, and he was joined by Sonny Gutierrez. And I think Stuart Fulton is emerging as one of the best play-by-play voices in the entire industry. He is fantastic.
He was excellent, you know, not just at, you know, following the storylines, calling the action. I mean, I get the sense the man speaks Japanese. Like, he was translating everything, or at least, you know, had the enough, like, you know, set up to be able to directly translate what was going on. So it gave you, like, a really great, complete English translated package of Stardom, and that's a huge plus to anybody looking to get into it.
Yeah, the fact they had English commentary for this match, that's just going to open the floodgates for people to sample this that much more. The English commentary makes a big difference today, and I think it's beyond time for Stardom to be utilizing English commentary. It was a pay-per-view over the weekend, so it cost $40. It will be up on Stardom World. If I'm Stardom in a week or two, I'm putting this entire thing up to get to as many people as possible. I would, you know, you want to have that window where it's exclusive for your pay-per-view buyers, but this is one you put out there. I would.
Or some sort of promotion for Stardom World, you know, like get your first month, you know, for a relatively cheaper price. I mean, you know, at this point, we're talking about a pretty niche product, and therefore maybe it should be presented as sort of like a, you know, in premium pricing. But
or put the 30 minutes up on YouTube, and for the full match, sign up to Stardom World.
That's a very good idea, I would think.
See the whole show up there, because I mean, it was it had the Cinderella finals as well. It was a really big show for Stardom on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that certainly the match of the week, and for some, match of the year. It's high up there. High up there as well is WWE Raw. That is our ultimate segue as we go into our go-home edition before Hell in a Cell this Sunday. And we start off with Alexa Bliss in the playground, who noted that she got a lot of strongly worded complaints over what Lily did last week. And we recap the closing.
I would be willing to bet her mentions were she was probably unfollowing a lot of people over the week.
Yeah, I think even the I think she was even unfollowing Brick Fanatics by probably the end of last week. So Shayna Baszler was only represented on the show from her show closing scream. So we still don't know what happened to Shayna Baszler, but her messenger, Nia Jax, on behalf of Shayna, challenged Alexa for this Sunday at Hell in a Cell, and Alexa accepted the challenge and also made one to Nia for later tonight. So it will be Alexa Bliss and Shayna Baszler this Sunday, the final pay-per-view without fans. So wait, let's go out with a bang. Let's do the ultimate pre-taped ode to everything that's been awful about cinematic matches.
Is this going to be cinematic, you think?
I think they have to do elements of it.
True.
At the very least.
Well, I was hoping for Shayna versus the Doll in a Hell in a Cell. In a Cell.
Yeah, you can't really do that after this Sunday.
Yeah.
Just on a pay-per-view.
Do it on green screen and the Doll's like 7 feet tall, you know?
All of this could happen.
The Doll steps on Shayna. So by the way, what do we let to believe here? Like, what are the ramifications of last week on Shayna Baszler? Is she injured here? Clearly not enough, like, because she issued the challenge.
Yeah, what happened?
I don't know.
Is she not here tonight?
Yeah, I have no idea. I think she's selling some sort of injury or psychological trauma, but she wasn't so traumatized that she didn't want to, like, she wanted the match.
Yeah, they did not give us any update on what happened in the room. Other than this is the equivalent of the room when it comes to WWE angles.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Smith tees up the show, and the man was officially sworn in way as the new voice when he said, "When you're speaking about momentum, who could possibly have more than Nikki Cross?"
Do you like see maybe the bits of his soul that are like steaming out of his body with every episode?
I'm seeing the bits of Corey Graves that is taking over his verbiage. So I think he is more than adjusting now to the voice of Raw. I think Jimmy Smith, I think he's like perfectly fine in this role. I'm not going to say this guy is great. I think if you're listening, like, there are elements that he is not going to be, he's not going to know the names of all this different stuff, but he's also not in a position where he needs to, but he is significantly better than the previous person occupying the chair. And he is like, if you get completely satisfactory, that's a win on this show.
He's exceeding my expectations. Absolutely. Yeah. And the bar, but you know, the expectations were pretty low. They were set by a pretty low bar.
Charlotte Flair is interviewed by Sarah Schreiber. Everyone knows that her and Rhea Ripley are going to have the best match at Hell in a Cell, but Rhea is not mature, and Charlotte needs to have this match with Nikki Cross to remove the match where she went the time limit from her record, which is not how rematches work. Nikki's 15 minutes of fame are over. So Nikki Cross and Charlotte Flair, the match that has actually been built up for the last month, not the pay-per-view match. Ripley comes out immediately, which leads to a roll-up by Nikki, but Flair kicks out. Flair takes over until Cross hit a tornado DDT, and then Flair rolls out to the floor, catches a high cross from Nikki, and hits a fall-away slam on the floor, does a kip-up, and is posing in front of Ripley, posing to so much distraction that she cannot hear the referee's count, which reaches 10, and Charlotte just looks completely flabbergasted that she has been counted out, and Nikki Cross wins in 7:54.
It's unbelievable, this feud. Yeah. It's, man, I think it's one thing for, like, you know, Rhea Ripley to forget the fact that she was in a beat the clock challenge and lose via, I guess, forgetfulness. Like, is that the official reason?
She
lost. Yeah, like she didn't realize she was in a beat the clock. It's another when you're already 3 weeks into this thing, we've established the importance of paying attention. And Charlotte just gets counted out because she couldn't help but make faces at her opponent. No matter what you think about this, that scenario, I think we have to all be in agreement in saying that the last thing any of us want to see at this point is a match between any of these three at the pay-per-view. Your choice is either between the two idiots or like the one babyface who only wins via technicalities and celebrates like she's just, you know, like won the Stanley Cup or whatever. Like, nobody here comes across well.
So, Jimmy Smith brought up the topic of momentum. Do you want to hear what Charlotte's momentum has been like on the road to this title match on Sunday?
Sure.
This is how bored I was during parts of this show. May 16th, WrestleMania Backlash. Charlotte loses to Rhea Ripley and Asuka in the triple threat for the women's title. The next night on Raw, May 17th, loses to Asuka. May 24th, the high point way, she beats Asuka. May 31st, loses to Nikki Cross in the Beat the Clock Challenge. June the 7th, teams with Rhea Ripley, losing to Nikki Cross and Asuka. Tonight, count out loss to Nikki Cross. She is 1-4. 1-5 since WrestleMania Backlash in the road to this title shot against Rhea Ripley. That is why no one cares.
Yeah, I mean, well, wins and losses matter some places, but not others. The sad part is that there are so many other women employed by this company that just could be in any spot with a Charlotte that would be able to benefit, honestly, from even a losing effort to Charlotte. And instead, we just kind of get week after week of Nikki Cross versus X, either Charlotte or Rhea Ripley, with the challengers and the champion losing to Nikki Cross. I just don't know what the thinking is at all.
Yeah, in a year that features The Fiend versus Randy Orton and Alexa Bliss versus Shayna Baszler, I have faith that if they keep going, Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley, they might give them a run for their money this year. I'm not counting out. Unlike the referee tonight, I'm not counting out Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley to be able to make a big run at worst feud of the year.
There's been no zombie yet in this feud.
Yet,
yeah.
Riddle is in the back with Jeff Hardy. And Riddle is talking about how he let down Randy last week, and he asks for some tag team advice. And Jeff, who I thought this dude was in a trance, he's got the eyes closed. It's about teamwork, continuity, but the most important thing is trust. When the trust is broken, the spirit of the team is gone. I can't believe I'm saying this, but you should listen to Randy Orton. He's been here a long time. When the Viper speaks, listening shows respect. I have a match with John Morrison. Actually, I have to go. Then his eyes opened. This blew Riddle's mind, and he rambled as Hardy had to go. Dude, what was this with Jeff Hardy? I read it with more life than Jeff Hardy did. I thought like this was that goddamn robot on Saved by the Bell with Screech.
I don't recall that one, but I get the idea. I don't know. I think it was their way, Jeff Hardy's way of using his imagination to sound interesting. I'm just like surprised, you know, in this era, this entire year of like, you know, cinematic matches, we haven't had the return of Jeff Hardy's inner monologue voice on TV. At this point, I welcome it. I think it would have been perfect for a segment like this where like Jeff Hardy has his eyes closed, but you hear his voice, and Riddle is the only person
who can hear it.
Yeah, like, come on, do something to make the man interesting.
That doesn't even sound preposterous on this show. That sounds like that's in the realm of, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. They should change up like his origin story to say like, Matt really was just an only child. And like, maybe like, you know, like the Hardy father found like this, like this kid and a baby in a spaceship. Like, just give him like, you know, Clark, like Superman's origin story. And I think people could buy it. Just like totally retcon it to make him a supernatural being.
Moving on. Randy Orton walked in, and Riddle apologized, and he won't let Randy down. And Orton tells Son, don't try and be another Randy Orton. Just be the best Riddle.
Yeah.
Nice heart-to-heart moment here.
That's what he's been doing. Yeah.
So then we had our big reunion between John Morrison and Jeff Hardy. Their last singles match, Way, took place on SmackDown in July of 2009. Last singles match on Raw, April of 2007.
Wow.
April of 2007.
That's a teenager. That's a high schooler.
Morrison hit Jeff with the drip stick from the floor. Morrison gets the heat when Cedric Alexander comes out. Hardy comes back, throws a towel at The Miz, and hits Whisper in the Wind. Morrison comes back, snaps Hardy on the top rope, and then hits Starship Pain to pin Jeff in 2 minutes and 46 seconds, which it took longer for me to look up their singles history than this match took.
I have no idea why. I know why Jeff Hardy lost here, but I don't know why, because the story was entirely focused on Jeff Hardy. It was focused on Cedric Alexander coming out here because he was pissed off that Jeff Hardy beat him last week. So what do? You beat Jeff Hardy while Cedric is on the lookout for revenge?
Well, then Cedric Alexander decided to fight his greatest adversary, the microphone. And Cedric screamed. Tried to scream. This was just...
Dude, his voice is like just really... I mean, it's like he's got a weird high pitch thing, you know, whenever he tries to talk serious. And it makes it really hard to take him seriously. But that doesn't mean that... it makes him kind of unique. And I say they should run with it. Like, they should just like make fun of his high pitch screaming, or like he should own it, really. Like... I don't know. Like Mike Tyson owns it, or whoever.
He said he idolized Jeff, but Jeff disrespected him. He called Jeff last week a sore winner. And Cedric is only sorry he didn't kick his ass into a retirement home. Jeff says, retirement home? I'm going to put my career on the line right now. It's like, what? What a comeback.
Maybe he was looking for an out, man. Maybe the guy's actually just like, he's done.
Man, I got offers. I could do a lot better than main event every week. So they had a career match, Way. An impromptu one. So Cedric Alexander hit a Michinoku driver. He gets frustrated, so he hits a Swanton bomb and then misses with it. Jeff comes back, stopped the neuralizer, hit a Twist of Fate, and he hit the Swanton bomb to keep his career going after 2 minutes and 50 seconds as the announcers proclaim, he bet on himself. It's like, what a stupid bet. Like, what does the house pay you for putting your career on the line? Congrats, you get to come back to work next week, which your contract dictated anyway. Great bet you took.
Well, he's a risk taker, that Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, huge risk.
So, I mean, the idea, I guess, is that, okay, well, Jeff Hardy can afford the loss. He's going to end the evening with a victory. All you're really doing is telling me the hierarchy of what these mid-carders are. You know, you have John Morrison, who is the Miz's lackey, who I suppose ranks above everybody. And then you have Jeff Hardy second. And then at the very bottom, the loser of the losers is Cedric Alexander, who I can't really say they're doing a great job of making me care.
You know what's very bizarre? So The Miz was doing press recently, and he was talking about the talk about his knee injury. And he admits, yeah, I'm hurt, but I'm not going to be gone for 9 months. I was on TV this week. I'll probably be on TV next week. It's like, we know he's hurt. Why is he here? Why are they flying him out? He's hurt. Mm-hmm. He's got no role on the show.
I mean, I think they probably see value in having his face on TV, I suppose. Come on. Having his presence. I can't tell you. I feel like most of the show, John, is booked to have people's faces on TV. Like, that's why they extend these things to several segments. They do these kind of rematches to just drag out the time Drew McIntyre's on the show. Maybe they feel that way about The Miz.
Out comes Naomi. And this was for the debut or the return of Eva Marie. And Eva Marie comes out, but she is assisted by Piper Niven.
And not identified as such.
No, not identified by a name. So instead of Eva Marie wrestling, it's Piper that takes the match and destroys Naomi with a senton, a splash off the ropes, and the Michinoku driver in 1:05 for Eva Marie to then announce herself as the winner. So we go to the jury, and I think we got a unanimous decision. Heel.
Yes. Yes, we did. Yeah, it was pretty obvious. So, you know, what I mean, I would say what maybe most of us didn't expect was that Piper Niven would be making her debut along with Eva Marie in a story like this. And the fact that they, you know, didn't mention Piper Niven being from NXT UK, I think it doesn't surprise me at all, but it does show you how little they expect people to have even heard of anybody from NXT UK.
And I can, yeah, I mean, if you are an NXT UK viewer, yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. It's on your network. That said, it's such a small amount of people that we are talking about. Like, it is as small as they portray it here on the show to not acknowledge, hey, that's Piper Niven from NXT UK. I mean, it's a little weird.
Whose fault is that? You know, is it the chicken or the egg, John? Like, they don't, it's not like they ever promote the show as anything.
I don't think they're looking at NXT UK to be like this big thing either. I think it's like it exists. It
sucks for everybody on that show.
I mean,
it's stuck there.
Yeah, it's something you couldn't get away with regular NXT. I mean, that would be completely ridiculous. But with NXT UK, I mean, it's a subset of a subset that are following.
Yeah, so that is the truth right now. The story, I have concerns. I mean, I think it's a pretty awful way of introducing like a serious wrestler like Piper Niven. It's a story, you know why they're doing it. It's putting all the focus on the way she looks. And, you know, this could very well kind of end up with, like, Piper Niven being, like, the star coming out of this, and maybe Eva's just sort of, like, the side character that, you know, will be forgotten in about 6 months. But I don't have high hopes. I can't say I have any faith that this company will be able to do this type of story any sort of justice. So, I'm not optimistic about this.
Yeah, from the makers of some pretty awful representations of women, I don't think you would be wise to put on your optimistic glasses for the future.
Yeah.
We will see. We will see. Famous last words. There's a photo shoot going on with Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose from earlier today. Did you notice the third flash of the camera?
No.
Because that was the heel turn.
What?
They turned heel mid-flash.
Oh, yes, yeah. I see. Yes.
Because Tamina and Natalya were over in the practice ring, and they told, can you keep it down? And Natalya says, you guys care more about how you look than how you do in the ring. And Natalya scolds them, saying, neither of you will ever be champion due to your priorities. And it wasn't your brains that opened doors for you. Rose says, those doors would have shut on the two of you years ago, if not for your last names. And then they get into an impromptu brawl in the practice ring.
Yeah, I mean, they were certainly acting heelish. Mandy and Dana were, I would say. But again, I think the jury's out until we see them in front of that Thunderdome crowd.
I mean, Tamina and Natalya were kind of obnoxious, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
yeah, well, you're supposed to hate everybody.
What a wonderful, wonderful cast of characters we have.
Yeah.
Who do you hate less? We have Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley. Take your pick. Who do you dislike more? Yeah. Well, Nikki Cross, you're supposed to like, although it's hard to it's hard to applaud her methods to victory. Your favorite way. I think Drew McIntyre is becoming your favorite interview backstage.
Oh, God. This history teacher Drew McIntyre? Oh sure, my goodness. Yeah.
Kevin Patrick asks him about his match with the almighty WWE champion Bobby Lashley. And Drew says, you can just say Lashley. You don't have to call him by the entire title. I like this part that Drew is the one guy that can call out the stupid WWE. We've got to call him by all of his nicknames to get there. Then he continued and called him Trashley. Trashley.
Probably another WWE thing.
He puts over AJ, his opponent tonight, as one of the best in the world. And Lashley, or Trashley, has never been in Hell in a Cell. And you need a brilliant strategy. And us Scottish are known for our strategies. I was like, oh God. Like William Wallace. Big Willie. And then Drew McIntyre went on to explain the Battle of Stirling Bridge. You know, recently, Drew McIntyre put out his book. I think he is now putting out subsequent copies, and he is trying to put entire books into these promos. He went on and on about the Battle of Stirling Bridge, which culminated in a pile of corpses. At the end of this story, he says, "What does this have to do with anything? Nothing. I just like the story, and I'm not going to share my strategy." This was just preposterous.
Perhaps in, you know, selling his book, like, it prompted him to take a trip to the library where he discovered the Encyclopedia of Scottish History or something. Because this man has all of a sudden just become this obsessive of injecting Scottish history references into these professional wrestling promos that, I mean, he was almost like making fun of it himself here that lead to absolutely nothing. It would be one thing if it was endearing, but this absolutely was not. Like, you just get the sense that I don't know what's going on here, okay? Because, like, Drew is one of the only bright spots of the WWE scripted promo that they have. He's somebody who can deliver fantastically whatever they want of him. He sounds natural doing it. And I don't know if this is his idea or if it's just the company's idea. You're Scottish. You gotta talk about Scottish history. Like, what the fuck? You're ruining, like, the only good promo you have in your terrible system that's impossible to flourish under. I don't know what they're thinking. What is going on?
It has nothing to do with Hell in a Cell. He literally summarized this promo on the Go Home Show. This has nothing to do with Hell in a Cell. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods against Randy Orton and Riddle. We had New Day send them to the floor and then fake them out with Kofi teasing a dive while Woods did the Tranquilo pose to set up our first commercial break. RK-Bro gets the advantage on Woods, and they're working over his arm as Jimmy Smith notes, "If you dislocate someone's elbow, you win." A not-so-subtle nod to Paul Craig and Jamal Hill on Saturday at UFC 263. A brutal injury, by the way.
Does that always happen, though? Like, can somebody choose to continue after dislocation?
The referee should be aware that there is a dislocation and it's stopped immediately.
Okay.
This one did not stop immediately. But Jamal Hill, only a dislocation, thankfully. Riddle is fighting for an armbar. Orton came in. I think these two have great chemistry together. Just, you know, two-on-one scenarios and such. Like, they are really gelling as a tag team. And I mean, these four are bringing out the best in each other in all these different combinations we've been seeing. We got an assisted floating bro that Riddle hit. Then a superplex frog splash combo is hit by the New Day. Orton is making saves. We go into some near falls. Kingston saves Woods from a draping DDT. And then Riddle tags, goes for the power German that Woods escapes. And then Kingston leaps off the top into a double stomp, sending Riddle off the shoulders of Woods. Orton gets tagged, and Woods counters the RKO, comes out of the corner for an honor roll into an RKO, and Orton pins Woods in 21 minutes and 43 seconds. The best thing on the show. I thought this was great.
If you're still watching Raw for wrestling for some reason, this might be the only thing that you'd be checking out. Very good match. I think Riddle and New Day are just providing great pace, great athleticism in whatever series of matches that they have. And, you know, in the end, you kind of have Orton coming in to do his thing with a pretty good RKO out of nowhere in this match.
Great finish. I mean, it was great that they, I mean, yes, you had the two commercial breaks, but they got almost 22 minutes here. You know, this was great. I think had this been commercial free on the pay-per-view Sunday, this probably would have been first or second best match on the show.
In terms of story, I mean, it seems like this week RK-Bro are on the same page. Though in the walk up the ramp, I mean, you know, I think Orton is still very much like playing the on the fence character. You don't exactly know what he's thinking, because it almost feels like rather than him being like warming up to Riddle as Riddle might be thinking, you almost get the sense that when just looking at him, he's just being tolerant of this guy. Like he can't wait to kill him. But, you know, I think they're doing a great job like pacing this thing and dragging it out.
They've certainly got something in these two. I can't imagine, though, that they don't do the turn to peak for SummerSlam. Like, I think that would probably be the timing, you would think.
Unless they're so confident that they have enough material to get to, like, Survivor Series or later.
It's funny that you've got this tag program going, and yet your tag champions have nothing going on.
Mm. Yeah.
But this feud, I mean, maybe this will set up now Orton and Riddle going for the tag titles, but after Hell in a Cell.
I think that's really what it should be. I mean, they are by far the hottest tag team in the company right now. So, yeah.
Schreiber is with Rhea Ripley, who calls Flair delusional. She can't control herself when Ripley's around, and it's funny to watch someone so powerful crumble. Kind of like this superstar in NXT that's come up.
Mm. Yes.
Ripley versus Asuka that they touted as a WrestleMania rematch. I think this is our like sixth incarnation of it. I found them to be a little off at the beginning.
This was the issue, like, with several of their matches. Yeah.
It just seemed like Ripley was just off, like, on some of the punches. It just seemed like they were not in sync with one another. It got better when it was mainly Asuka making the comeback. She demonstrated a lot of fire. Ripley caught her on a roll-up attempt and used that inverted clover leaf. Asuka countered out, spinning back fist that Rhea ducks and hits the Riptide in 11:04.
I think good for the most part, but, you know, still some moments of miscommunication. And at least Ripley wasn't booked to look like a dork in this finish.
It was weird. She won. She's got a title match on Sunday. What are they doing?
Yeah. I don't know. They're trying this new thing out where they're trying to make their champion look strong. We'll see how it goes.
It would have been awesome if for the go home show, Asuka and Nikki Cross beat the two sides of the title match going into Sunday.
And it's Flair, just forgotten about, like no follow-up.
Ric Flair came out. I'm picturing Ric Flair in this bodysuit coming out. But it was Charlotte who comes out in like this spandex bodysuit that it's quite the outfit.
I mean, I think her new style is great. Like, I really like it. But I mean, it's, you know, I couldn't pull it off.
I think if you return to jiu-jitsu, I think this should be your look.
Oh, yeah? Sure.
They get into this huge pull apart. Charlotte is just maniacal, trying to get through the producers, and ends up with a bloody nose by the end of it. So this was like our most physical angle.
Yeah, I didn't see how the bloody nose happened, but I mean, it worked out for the scenario.
Lashley and MVP are in the lounge, and MVP cuts a promo. Lashley isn't working tonight because he's the champion. Drew can do whatever he wants. And then Lashley gets involved and says, the same thing that happened to William Wallace will happen to Drew for the capital offense of challenging for my title. If you thought that was just subtle to decapitation, he then spelled it out that this Sunday, I will publicly execute Drew and mount his head on a stick. For the company that like shies away from like blood, this is quite the visual that they put in your head to go into Sunday, that by the end of this, Drew McIntyre, our favorite storyteller, will have his head severed from his body and placed on a stick.
So You could tell whoever came up with like the Drew promo really loved the William Wallace reference, so much so that, I mean, they made it the crux of Bobby Lashley's promo as well. And I'm just like, honestly, I'm really just imagining like who is being so obsessive about like their Scottish history all of a sudden. Like, you know, if you thought Ozzy Osbourne was a dated reference, I suppose, in 2021, we're going to take it back to the 13th century. You know, and really try to like boost ratings for that like 800 plus demo. It's crazy. Like, I don't understand what's going on. They're making their main act just look so silly.
Yes. I will execute Drew and mount his head on a stick. The same company that once had to make a phone call and say, we've got to fire you. Why? You choked someone with a tie. Oh, yes. You're fired.
Well, I mean, did William Wallace ever choke somebody with a tie? That's
true. That's true. He never committed that offense. You know, I've never seen Braveheart.
Me neither.
No. Don't suggest it. It's too long a review.
No, I'm never going to watch it.
We did watch Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax. Another WrestleMania rematch. Bliss attacks Jax and gets her to a knee. Jax runs her over with an avalanche. Jax misses in the corner. I think it's contractual that Jax has to run her shoulder into the corner every single match to get the heat for the opponent. Reginald, poof, appears out of nowhere on the apron to distract Bliss. It doesn't work. Bliss hits a DDT, twisted Bliss, but then Reginald pulls her off for the DQ in 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is one of those like WrestleMania matches you don't want to give away, right?
You know, you can't pin Nia Jax going into this match on Sunday. So the big moment was Alexa stared at Reginald, who was hypnotized by Alexa Bliss as she used the power, I guess, of her hand. Was that the source?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'll have to look it up.
Were you under a trance as well?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. You know, I think I'm an impermanent trance. Choosing to dedicate my life to 3 hours of this every Monday.
If there is a gif that comes out of this show that will live forever, it's Reginald snapping back into reality after this hypnosis.
Well, don't you think they did mind control in Cirque du Soleil?
I'm sure he volunteered for this story. Dude, yeah. Sunday's gonna be a wreck. I'm so ready for it.
Yeah, man, it's like segment after segment now of like. Like, what clip do I use for the YouTube? I feel like everything I could pull.
Our heads on sticks.
Yes, that's right. So, I mean, I think in this match, like, we don't often see Alexa actually wrestle. And I feel like they have refined some things about her in-ring wrestling to really signify that she is a changed wrestler. They had her do, like, a, you know, alligator walk, which, like, with Alexa's flexibility actually looks kind of creepy and looks kind of cool. And then she'll repeatedly go for the rear naked choke as sort of, like, a creepy rear naked choke, you know, like the move of the ghouls, the rear naked choke. And I mean, I don't know. They're trying to make her seem different when she's wrestling. I mean, they have to now tailor this act for like a live crowd, and it's going to be very difficult.
I mean, she's got to beat Shane on Sunday, doesn't she?
I would think so. Yes. Using mind control. Like what? What do you think is the move?
The Black whole tar? Gamut. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe her insides explode.
Is there, you know, are there betting lines for like how this match might end?
I haven't been sent betting lines yet, but when they come, I will absolutely pass them along to you.
Okay.
I don't know what the odds will be for this one. It could be a pick 'em. MVP is with the New Day and asks Kofi if he thought about what they discussed last week, bringing up their loss to RK-Bro. So Kofi Mania is never coming back. You're wasting your time in tag teams with people that don't measure up. Xavier is just standing here taking all this. He said, in a singles match, you only have yourself to blame, but tonight you weren't even pinned, and yet you're still a loser. Kingston says that he will never say MVP is right. I am successful because of my bond with my friends, and MVP wishes him good luck this Sunday at your match at Hell in a Cell. Oh yeah, you don't have one. So then Kofi said, hey, MVP, we're in the network era. you realize that we don't even have it written in our contracts that we are guaranteed pay-per-view payoffs. It's totally discretionary. So we're a television-based company now, and we're not getting a cut of that contract either. So I've just got to work one less date this week. Well, you got to come back here on Sunday. I'm going to be home. So who's out ahead, MVP? Give Nick Khan a call. Say hello.
It was a very surprising depth of promo. Yeah. I thought this was like probably the only thing I enjoyed.
This is a good story that they've got going. All jokes aside, I think this is something where they're continuing it. It's leading somewhere. And I think it's interesting. Like MVP and Kofi, it's great. You have Xavier involved in this. It would be hard to imagine them having Kingston turn. But I think what we're going to do is that they're going to mount up. They always go for these stories where it's like it's justification to beat people over and over and over again. I think that's what we're going to get with this story with New Day is that Woods keeps losing.
Hmm. Sure.
Like where else can the story go?
Unfortunately, he is already kind of like the de facto fall guy for the New Day anyway. So I don't think he loses anything. I mean, you know, no pun intended by losing more. I just think it's really refreshing to finally be able to see Kofi get fired up about something. And MVP really is a miracle worker because he's been able to do so much for so many guys to just drag that out of them. And nobody needs it more than Kofi Kingston right now, who has just been, ever since the Brock loss, just been completely apathetic. Like, he does not feel like a real person, you know? Like, he's been showing no emotion, or at least he's been, maybe he does feel like a real person in that he's, like, hiding behind, you know, a fake smile this entire time. But finally, like, we're getting some emotion out of Kofi talking from the heart about how he feels. Like, we're showing some depth of his character here. I thought he, like, in the past 2 weeks, he's cut probably some of his best promos since that title reign, maybe even during the title reign. I don't even remember. But you know, I am looking forward to seeing what happens after this.
Time for the main event. Elias versus Jackson Ryker. Jackson Ryker walks down to the ring, as Jimmy Smith notes, Jackson Ryker, always intense. To emphasize that, we got an inset promo from Jackson Ryker, who said that Elias always wanted to walk alone. That's okay. But I wasn't holding you back. You were holding me back. And as he delivered these vicious lines, they zoomed into his eyes. As the announcers explained that you can look into those eyes and see a man that has been to battle.
Could you see that?
I did, actually. You kind of have to check your viewfinder. It was in there.
So they are saying, like, he's a war vet without, I guess, hitting you over the head with, like, hey. Like, he's not coming out dressed in the flag or, like, army fatigues or anything like that.
Give him time.
He's just, yeah, he's a man who has seen battle. Generic wrestler, generic promo. It's like, I think that should be the gimmick. He is like, he is the most generic wrestler in the world. You know, if he was in like GCW or something like that, they would brand him as like the most generic wrestler. Like, it would be like, I don't know, like think of the most generic wrestler name. It'd probably be Jackson Ryker. You know, he'd come out with a theme exactly like what he sound like.
This theme like is the worst. This might be the worst theme in wrestling.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Anyway. Yeah. Elias versus Jackson Ryker. Line up, everybody. Like, you know, it's what we've all been waiting for.
Elias fought Ryker until he had had enough. He was running to the post. The count is going. Unlike Charlotte, Elias was aware of the count and just opted not to beat it. So he was counted out in 2.5 minutes. So we're going to continue this song and dance for however long before Jackson Ryker gets him into a match where he can't escape. And neither can you, the viewer. Lashley and MVP come out to watch the match. They're on the couch with the women. And it's AJ versus Drew McIntyre. So the match begins. Drew hits the Future Shock DDT, but instead of going for the pin, he just stares at Lashley up the ramp. Omos then pulls AJ to the floor. Lashley comes down to the ring. The Viking Raiders come out, who are Drew's buddies, and we go to commercial. We come back. The match continues. Drew hits a Michinoku driver, which was hit in like three different matches tonight. Styles avoids the superplex and hits an Ushigoroshi. Onto the floor they go, and Drew goes after Lashley, running him into the barricade. Hits a top rope clothesline to AJ when Lashley runs in for the DQ after 13 and a half minutes. The Vikings get involved. Drew hits a belly-to-belly to Lashley on the floor. Come back from break, and we've got a six-man tag with Lashley, Styles, and Omos versus Drew McIntyre and the Viking Raiders.
Like, it's one of those tropes about WWE TV that we've all just really come to accept now, you know? They go to break, there's a lack of resolution. Come back, everybody's in a match. And I'm just like, I imagine maybe the the casual viewer or like the person who's only like seen wrestling as they were a kid and then all of a sudden is jumping into the present, just being completely confused about what this is. I mean, in the end, it is just a way of getting everybody's faces on TV, you know, to keep the stars on the TV while giving you a finish to close the show without giving anything away.
So we had the six-man. Lashley and Ivar had an entertaining exchange here. And from there, Omos comes in with Ivar. Man, they are so careful with Omos. It's like they want him doing the bare minimum.
Dude, like they were not subtle about pairing him with Drew McIntyre in some several big stare-down moments here. And you could just tell...
I thought the same thing. It's that they are going to try out Omos, and it could be with Drew. Yeah.
Oh my God! This is probably Vince's like WrestleMania main event in like a year. You know, It'd be one thing if it was like in 5 years, but like they're rushing this guy Omos, I think.
Yeah, I saw enough of him in this six man that it's like, dude, I just don't know how much you can get out of this guy. Like, the AJ thing has run its course. It's like, there's just, I don't know. Maybe it's like, you've got to move and see what you've got here. And then it's, you make the decision to cut bait or not. But I mean, I don't know.
The creative isn't so strong that I think we have any sort of gauge of like, you know, how good of a promo he is, for instance. In ring, like, we're not really getting to see a whole lot either. Like, they're telling him to play a giant, and that means don't do anything that impressive, unfortunately. Yeah, maybe he'll surprise us. I'm not sure, but I just feel like it still might be too much too soon.
To your point, there was a lot of Omos and Drew here. Omos yanked Drew by the hair, and then he threw the Vikings over the barricade. As Jimmy Smith notes, there are no special effects here. Omos is the real deal. This is not like Roman Reigns and Dominic. There are no special effects here.
Yeah. Nor The Fiend, nor Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, of course. AJ, so the end is he's been beaten down and he collapses into his corner and you think he's going for Omos, and then he tags Lashley, who's all confused that he's been tagged, turns around and is hit with the Claymore, and Drew pins Lashley on the go-home show in 1340. I'm surprised they did this ending. And first of all, your thoughts on the six man?
It was a wrestling match.
Correct.
You know? Yeah, it happened. And got Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley on TV for.
Were you saying at the end, oh man, 6 days, six more days, Hell in a Cell?
I was not. No, unfortunately, I was not. But I mean, you know, the finish was logical, like having your challenger beat the champion ahead of the title match.
So I thought we could break this up instead of saving our Hell in a Cell preview and just quickly look at the Raw matches, because there's only like three of them. Okay. For Bobby Lashley and Drew, you've got the Hell in a Cell match and the stip that if Drew loses, it's his last chance to challenge Bobby Lashley. So I think your options are, do you want, as you go back with crowds, that Drew is your champion, or do you just move forward with Lashley? Because honestly, like this kind of a stipulation, I would say if Drew was going to win the title and it's his last chance, why wouldn't you save this till next month when you're in front of fans? It just seems like giving away that title win without the audience, it just seems like you're missing an opportunity.
Well, does this discount, let's say, Drew McIntyre winning the Money in the Bank? Like, would he be able to win Money in the Bank and still challenge for the belt?
I guess you could do that. I mean, these are WWE stipulations that are not going to be held to the letter of the law. I can certainly see Drew failing here. But I am given the WrestleMania loss, I mean, it's tough to imagine them beating Drew a second time, but I just think it's a weird time to flip the title, and not do it at, a more advantageous time period.
I agree. I think that would be strange too. And I think there's enough life in Bobby Lashley right now that we've, barely explored that. I feel if you weren't going to do it at WrestleMania, I don't understand the logic of doing it at a Hell in a Cell in front of nobody. So I'm predicting Lashley wins and somehow they maneuver out of the stipulation later on.
Or Omos costs them the match way and we get Drew and Omos in front of everyone at Allegiant Stadium in August.
Oh, okay.
Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair.
Oh, fuck. Oh. Just a terrible feud. Somehow Nikki Cross will interfere and win this one.
I was worried when I looked at Charlotte's record. I mean, she's 1-5. That tends to be the pathway to regaining a title.
Oh, I guess so. Maybe it's a double countout, John. They both forget that they're
that would be the best match. That would cap off this cycle perfectly. They both get counted out without realizing it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't care what kind of... I'm sure the match will be fine on Sunday, but I can't think of a feud that has just decimated my interest.
I mean, I don't even realize this until I'm actually looking at the match on paper right now. They already have a story. I mean, it's Rhea Ripley trying to avenge her loss to Charlotte from WrestleMania that sent her on a downward spiral.
That's been brought up a grand total of zero.
They're just, it's already written out for them. Instead, we've had months, a whole month of both of them losing to Nikki Cross, of all people. Leading up to this match, I don't understand it at all. But, man, the way these pay-per-views are, if the match is really good, we tend to forget about everything beforehand. So they could still have a great match.
Well, on Sunday, I'm going to bring up the storyline, no matter how great of a match it is on Sunday. And then the only other Raw match is Alexa Bliss and Shayna Baszler, which, I mean, I just think this is their last Thunderdome pay-per-view. So I think they're going to just get everything out that they are not going to be able to do on future pay-per-views. I think this will have, whether it starts as a match, I think this is going to, I think it almost necessitates all the surreal elements. Lily's got to be in here. So that's what this will be, I think.
I would actually hope for that. To me, that would be a welcome surprise. But something tells me that they would just, I don't know, they're going to have a pretty mediocre match with this version of Alexa Bliss. Shayna's selling for a lot of it. Shayna's selling a rear naked choke to... Oh, God.
What if Lily comes to life as Mei Ying?
I'd like to see how they would do that with special effects. But yeah, sure, why not? Throw all the supernatural stuff into one single entity and just kind of get it over with. But I don't know. We've seen Alexa Bliss in these sort of things. And I mean, we've seen plenty of feed matches that have ended up being completely unsatisfying. So this could just be as big of a fuck up. I wouldn't even be surprised if they didn't give us a finish for this match or at least some of the other ones.
All right. Let's we'll talk about
I'm very optimistic matches. About this show.
Well, we've only got 5 matches for this show. It'll be interesting what the length of this show is, given the start time. I'll be perfectly happy if it's, 2.5 hour show. Tonight's show from the forum got a 6.2. I think that's 6 of that unreal. Was for the tag match.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's see what the justification is.
Paul from New Jersey. I know you gentlemen have touched on this before, but it's really weird to me how Nikki Cross is being booked like a fangirl who's just lucky enough to be in the ring. Jeff Hardy cut one of the worst promos of his career, and that's really saying something. I'm actually glad Eva Marie is back, and I thought Piper looked fantastic. For what it's worth, Dana and Mandy sounded a lot more natural than usual. Definitely some good things on the show tonight. However, Ross still fails to capture my attention for more than 90 minutes. I leave the show in its full up to you professionals. Shout out to Todd Pettengill and Stephanie Wyand.
Oh man, Todd Pettengill, I thought did a great job last night. He looks exactly the same.
He is, the guy is he's been a radio broadcaster for decades. So, and he's also been in that system where he is very good with delivering whatever is put in front of him. I thought by the time they got to the karate fighters bit, I was like, okay, you've kind of run this into the ground. It was like, we got it. Life ended for you in 1997 when you left the company. And when you leave this company, time stands still until we give you the golden call back to come to our world.
Hey, VHS. That doesn't happen anymore. Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah. The Stephanie Wyand reference, like, I laughed at that. That was very funny.
We got Alex from Portland who says, the women's division looked very rough tonight. I looked up Rhea Ripley on Cage Match, and since her debut on Raw in March, she's had 9 matches, 8 of those involving Asuka. I'm disappointed a Rhea Ripley and Asuka match feels so unimportant now. Nikki Cross feels like WWE's version of Toru Yano, considering we're getting, well, I think unintentionally, sure.
Yeah.
Considering we're getting an Alexa and Shayna at Hell in a Cell, I found it disappointing that Alexa had her in-ring return tonight instead of saving it for the pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah. The money that was burned from giving away that return.
RK-Bro and New Day stole the show. Really glad I tuned in tonight because I would have cried if I had to miss Jeff Hardy's unpromoted retirement match.
His career almost ended tonight.
4 out of 10 show. Question, win or lose on Sunday, where do you go with Drew McIntyre? He's beaten basically everybody on that roster.
It just feels weird to put the title back on him, but I mean, they've set up the stipulation that leads you to that conclusion. But I mean, it's ultimately like this, if he loses, you spin him off with somebody else, but you would figure like he needs to be in something important. To Wei's point, I think that you could have him lose and then it's a reason for him to be in Money in the Bank. And that's his way around to get back to a title match.
Who do you see Drew with at WrestleMania or sorry, SummerSlam right now?
Yeah, I don't think we can look that far at WrestleMania. SummerSlam. I mean, now you've put the Omos thing in my head. So, I mean, like, that's one of the things that like, dude, what are the options? Like, Lashley, we're reaching the end of the road with Drew and Lashley. It would be really hard to squeeze another match out of them, especially for
after a Hell in a Cell. You know,
once like, you've done Hell in a Cell and you did Mania and you did the three-way. Three-way was very good last month. What are your options on Raw?
Yeah.
He's done. And Randy were done to death last year.
Let's also remember we got Kofi Kingston being set up for presumably Bobby Lashley right now.
Maybe.
So that could at least be a Money in the Bank match. You know, probably won't be SummerSlam.
Yeah. I mean, it's slim pickings on Raw when you're taking Drew out of that main event picture. Like, it would have been the same for Randy if he hadn't found this tag program. Like, there's such a, like, you're out of that title picture and they don't have a very strong midcard.
Could they do Kofi? Like, Kofi beating and Lashley. Drew? Yeah, and then Kofi and Drew.
So Kofi and Drew. Yeah, you could. I mean, that's your way around it. It's as long as Lashley is champion.
But double babyface, I guess I wouldn't know how they would do that. Well, we presume double babyface. We don't know. But let's not get people's hopes up, I suppose.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, Drew has gone through Lashley, Orton, and Sheamus, and those are kind of your big heels on the show, unless you're looking at like AJ and Omos. Like, that's kind of your next level.
So we can't say like there is some intrigue as to, you know, the finish of this match on Sunday. We, you know, it's relatively kind of,
it's one where you could go either way. Like, maybe the thought is put it on Drew and then we're returning to fans with Drew as champion and someone to feud with. There is that option.
I hate to like rush, but I've been holding my urine in for like 50 minutes here. So let's wrap this show up, John.
Well, guys, that is going to cancel our impromptu review I was going to do of all the television from over the weekend. Wei has got to go, literally.
I'm about to faint, man. Yes, I do have to.
That is it. Goodbye, everyone. We'll be back on Tuesday. Rewind away, the longest yard, up for all cafe members. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye. Good night.